Hello from Washington, D.C., everyone. My name is Jeff Concourse. I'm communications specialist with the Office of Acquisitions and Assistance here at USAID. Thank you for joining us this morning. I want to thank you also for all of the questions that you submitted. We received more than 200 questions on the third quarter business forecast, which all of which we'll be answering and posting soon. Want to now go ahead and introduce everyone in the room here. We have Mark Walther, who's acting director of MOAA, Randy Tift, who's a senior advisor and the lead champion for effective partnering and procurement reform, EPPR, Kimberly Ball with us, deputy director of the Office of Small and Disadvantaged Business Utilization, OSDBU. And also we have Jorge DeLeonto Hassenstein, sorry about that, who is with Foreign Operations. So we'll go ahead and get started with the update. I'm going to turn it over to Randy, who's going to give us an update on effective partnering and procurement reform.
Thank you, Jeff. And greetings, everybody. Thank you for joining. The administrator and other agency principals continue to emphasize to Congress and other key stakeholders the importance of USAID transformation efforts, including effective partnering and procurement reform, or EPPR, in building the USAID of tomorrow. I want to thank Mark Walther and the rest of the MOAA for their support and contributions to EPPR, along with USAID colleagues beyond our contract and agreement officers, representing policy, program, legal, and other USAID functions. More than 100 field and DC-based colleagues are supporting these efforts actively right now. EPPR milestones are scheduled to be achieved throughout the summer and fall of 2018, culminating in changes that will be announced later this year. EPPR has engaged and continues to engage in internal and external outreach, including partner meetings, meetings with associations, internal agency stakeholder meetings, and meetings directly with employees, for example, at this week's Democracy, Rights, and Governance Forum. We also had senior leaders doing workshops in Frankfurt, Bangkok, and elsewhere in the field to learn what works and what needs to change from our COAO colleagues and others. Interestingly, feedback from employees in the field mirror many major themes of feedback that we've received from partners, from some of you. It all centers on design and procurement timelines, some burdensome and bureaucratic processes, the need to change, to engage new partners, and a need for adaptive programming. To sum up, EPPR is progressing well, and we'll have more specific information and outcomes to discuss later this year, but I hope I was able to give you just a little more insight into the EPPR process and where it stands today. Now I have the pleasure of turning it over to Mark Walther.
Thanks, Randy. Greatly appreciate you taking the opportunity to highlight the updates. We know this is of great interest both internally and externally with the agency, and we really appreciate the opportunities where we can update our partners. I'd just like to thank all our individuals on the call today and everyone who helps in the preparation of the questions that we get and working through the responses. It really is something the agency greatly appreciates and will continue to foster as we go ahead. We know how important the business forecast calls are, as well as giving us an opportunity to update on a variety of recent topics and issues, and we appreciate having that ability. So I wanted to take an opportunity before we get into the question and answers just to highlight a number of recent changes, either the ADS 300, 303, the ADAR, and some other brief updates. First, some of you might have seen, it's been posted both internally and externally, that we have revised ADS 300. That's the agency's acquisition and assistance planning guidance that's been incorporated and includes our agency senior leadership reviews of ANA. These reviews are now being referred to as senior obligation alignment reviews, SOAR. So please get used to that reference and name. Obviously, it's been previously known as ARAD Reviews. And I just want to take a moment just to highlight some key areas. First and foremost, the main reason for the revision really is to ensure that operating units are addressing reform approaches, the administrator's goals and visions, such as helping countries become self-reliant, advancing collaboration and co-creation, and broadening opportunities to enhance competition, to name a few. All of you are familiar that with the external listening tour and the partner engagement that that these themes have continued to resonate to here with the agency and with our partners, and we want to make sure that they're getting embraced in our largest acquisition and assistance efforts here at the agency. Another key area that you'll note is there are adjustments to the review levels. The administrator will be reviewing A&A-related activities, pre-solicitation at $40 million and above. Assistant administrators will be reviewing at $20 million to under $40 million. And separately, we added a new aspect to the review process in regard to public international organizations. They're being reviewed at $5 million and above by the administrator and below $5 million with the assistant administrators. Again, we really do appreciate this opportunity to update this chapter and begin more effectively in our continued efforts to embrace, again, the reform efforts and the administrator's vision. And we look at this as another milestone in working to achieve those efforts. Another item you may have noticed as of last Friday, the agency did a revision to ADS Chapter 303 on assistance, where it's enhancing USAID's pre-award risk assessment and sub-award approval procedures in order to more effectively prevent specially designated individuals, or SDNs, and blocked persons from receiving agency funds. The U.S. Treasury's Office of Foreign Asset Controls maintains a list. It's commonly referred to as the OFAC list. The revised ADS 303 sections now state that the USAID agreement officers will require prime applicants to confirm that they have checked the OFAC and other various public lists for proposed subaward recipients by the name of the subaward recipient. So this is a slight change from the past. USAID only required certification on the part of the prime without specific identification in the certification to the sub-award recipients. Please note, we're undertaking this step. We believe it can be easily undertaken, and this truly is a benefit both to partners and the agency in preventing these type of possible situations from occurring. So we appreciate your cooperation in these efforts. Another key area that was updated related to sexual misconduct and other forms of abuse. This is a direct result of the administrator's reaffirmation of USAID's zero tolerance policy on sexual abuse and exploitation earlier this year. ANA Policy Directive 1803 outlines changes to the ADAR section covering contractor mission relations. Simply stated, the contracting language stipulates that contractors must protect beneficiaries from sexual abuse and exploitation by contractor staff and hold themselves to the standards outlined in the UN General Assembly's bulletin that was entitled Special Measures for Protection from Sexual Exploitation and Abuse. The clause also includes steps that the USAID contracting officer must take should an incident of misconduct occur, including immediately reporting the case to the Office of the Inspector General. In similar fashion, ADS 303 was also revised to include similar language on the assistant side. We would like to take a moment to note here that if you've signed up to receive implementing partner notices, what we refer to as the IPN from the agency, we also try to use that venue to assist in notification of these type of changes. If by any chance you don't currently receive these notices and would like to, I would encourage you to reach out to IPN at USAID.gov and specify whether you'd like to receive them for assistance or acquisition or both. Another procurement-related item that I wanted to note was the release of Procurement Executive Bulletin 2-1802. This PEB states that selection of instrument determination for democracy and governance programs should be made available to the public when an RFP or notice of funding opportunity is released. This determination was made to increase transparency in the democracy and governance sector, and it only relates to that sector at this point in time, but I did want to just highlight that it includes democracy programs here in Washington and as well as from our overseas missions. Finally, I want to take the opportunity to highlight and to thank our Office of Small and Disadvantaged Business Utilization. Their annual business conference is being hosted coming up here on July 11th at the JW Marriott in Washington. This is a great event that we really appreciate contributing to each year, and we really appreciate Kimberly Ball here from the OSTB office this morning providing more details of these items related to our small business community. And turn it over to Kimberly now.
Thank you, Mark, for the opportunity to speak this morning on behalf of OSTB. Recio is attending another event this morning. He's at our subcontracting summit, where we educate our large business partners on their responsibilities relating to subcontracting and the associated requirements. As you said, we'll be hosting our annual conference on July 11th this year at the JW Marriott. We expect to have a really exciting day. We're going to hear from our Chief of Staff, Bill Steiger. We're going to hear from some folks from the SBA. We'll hear a little bit more about EPPR that you heard Randy Tift give the update on this morning. So we'll have several of our senior folks talking about that. In addition, we're going to have an exhibit hall, and in the afternoon we'll host a number of breakout sessions on issues that we think are relevant to those small business partners currently working with us and those who want to work with us. So we'll be talking about things like category management, how to market to the U.S. government. We'll talk about getting your first NICRA and a number of other things. The agenda is available online. I would encourage you to take a look. We expect it to be a particularly exciting day, so we're really happy about that. The other thing I wanted to talk to you about this morning, I'm excited to announce a launch of our new small business market analysis research tool. We're calling it SBMART. SBMART is a database comprised of small businesses who either are already working with us or want to be working with us. It's a system where you can put your information directly into the database. You'll have an opportunity to identify the NAICS codes that your company works under, upload a CAPE statement, identify your website. We're also asking people to tell us where they're currently working, where they have worked, so we want to get a sense of your past experience, both with USAID and with other organizations. And we'd like to hear about what contracts you're already on. So you have an opportunity to upload this information. We're reviewing it before you're confirmed, but it's a relatively simple process that we're really excited about, and it allows us to have a place where our staff, our contracting and technical folks, can look at firms that are simply interested in development as opposed to some of the other government-wide databases that have a lot more information that's outside of our little niche that we have here at USAID. We've already launched a database internally, so USAID staff already know that this is a place to find capable, qualified small businesses. We do remind staff, though, that this database is not an exhaustive list of all potential small business partners, and there is no requirement for you to enter your information in order to be considered for USAID work, but it is a tremendous opportunity to help us get to know you better. And we believe that this tool is going to make it easier for you to share your capabilities with the agency. So I encourage you to take a look at SBMART. The address is sbmart.usaid at usaid.gov, and we'll make sure that the address is in the notes for this phone call. So with that, I'll turn it back over to Mark. Thank you.
Thanks, Kimberly. And we're now going to start going through a few of the business forecast questions just to highlight. And again, as Jeff noted at the beginning, we're actively working to get them posted, and we'll continue our final efforts on the few remaining questions there. So I'll let Jeff start with the particular questions to highlight.
Great. Thanks, Mark. Okay. The first question is on broad agency announcements, and it's for you, Mark. With USAID's stated commitment to utilize co-creation and co-design in procurement and the appearance of co-creation as a distinct process in BAAs, would USAID consider sharing a list of BAA awards, awardees, award types, such as contract, cooperative agreement, grant, and award amounts to help implementing partners learn about what works as well as better gauge return on investment?
Sure. Thanks, Jeff. In fiscal year 2017, we began tracking the BAA use within our procurement systems, both acquisition and assistance. Awards are possible under the BAAs, acknowledging that there's been a large amount of cooperative agreements awarded using that particular tool. That we do emphasize and continue to emphasize, the BAA is just one of various tools. The solicitations as well as the awards should be being found and posted either on grants.gov or fbo.gov. So if there's a disconnect on the awards associated with a particular BAA, we can work towards getting clarification there. We'd also like, again, to clarify and emphasize, while the broad agency announcement uses co-creation approach as part of its process, we are trying to educate and inform and highlight that co-creation can be used in more than one method. It's not just associated with the BAA. Also, we believe that co-creation can be used in other fashions, not just the procurement itself. It could be part of the design, it could be part of the solicitation evaluation process, it could be used as a method during implementation as well. So those are areas we really are continuing to try to highlight, emphasize, and there'll be another question later where I'll expand on this a little bit further.
Great, thank you. The next question is about small business targets, and it's addressed to Kimberly. In the recent report of USAID performance against small business targets, it appears that the number of small businesses working with USAID has decreased. However, looking at the USAID forecast, it is clear that the volume of small business opportunities, particularly in the areas that were more recently held by large businesses, such as field project implementation, is rapidly increasing. Surveying the small business landscape, it appears that a large number of small businesses are graduating and there are not as many small businesses with field implementation track records prepared to take their place as prime implementers. What is USAID thinking about how to reconcile this issue?
We recognize that as our existing small business partners become more successful, they lose their status. It's sort of the nature and intention of the program. So that's both exciting and obviously it can be a little bit challenging for us as we continue to strive to find new small businesses with proven track records, as you said, to replace them. Then we're continually looking for those businesses to supplement our partner base. It is one of the tenets of procurement reform is expanding our partner base. And we look for these small businesses by hosting conferences, by attending conferences. And as I mentioned earlier, we just recently launched our SB Mart, which is a place for businesses to enter their information so that we can find them. We also continue to partner with Mark's team to ensure that contracting officers are given small businesses maximum practical opportunity to compete. Having said that, if you see something on the business forecast that you believe can be performed by a small business, please contact the Cognizant CO. The business forecast includes an agency staff directory, so you have an email address where you can reach out to folks. You're also free to reach out to OSDBU. And one other thing I'd like to add is that we are looking at innovative ways to bring in new small businesses. Mark talked briefly about the BAAs. One of the other new programs that we have is SBAR, the Small Business Applied Research Program. Back in January, we did a call here in the agency for problem statements to talk about agency issues or development issues in the areas of water, agriculture, energy, and mobile technology. We sent that out using the BAA model and received 74 proposals. We're still in the process of reviewing those, but we're very excited that it's going to be an opportunity for small businesses to help us respond to some of our problems. It's very unique in government contracting to have an opportunity to tell the agency how to solve their problem as opposed to just responding to an RFP as we've traditionally done. So we're really excited about that. We have another call for problem statements that will be ending later this week. So in the next month or so, I would say be on the lookout for another RFP from the agency on FedBizOps that will give you an opportunity again to share your solutions to some of our development problems. Thanks.
Great. Thank you, Kimberly. The next question is about category management, and it's directed toward Deb Broderick, who I did not get to introduce earlier. She's a deputy director of MOAA and our category management guru. The question is, we understand that USAID may have met its 35% target for the year for using best-in-class vehicles like OASIS. Can USAID confirm this, and can USAID provide any insight into any additional plans to use OASIS for the rest of FY18?
thanks, Jeff. Yes, I can confirm. We did meet the best-in-class goal in fiscal year 17. However, that said, we did not meet the spend under management goal. So OMB has two goals, best-in-class and some. And the sum goal, just as a reminder, sum is Tier 1, Tier 2, and Tier 3 combined. So Tier 3 being best-in-class, Tier 2 being agency, government-wide contracts, IDIQs, and then Tier 1 being our own agency, IDIQs. So that composes the sum, and we did not meet that goal. We have instructed, you're asking what are we going to do going forward? We've basically instructed our contracting staff to use the multiple award mechanisms if those mechanisms are available to meet USAID requirements. This is a standard FAR provision that we are supposed to consider GSA schedules if, in fact, we can meet the requirement that way. And, of course, beyond that, our own agency IDIQs as well. And if we can't do that, then obviously we would go and put out a C contract or whatever other mechanism that would work to meet the requirement. We do not have any plans beyond that general guidance. We did, this was June, Category Management Month, and GSA did come and do some trainings for our staff and basically making them aware of what's available in the in this arena for to meet these two goals. I hope that's that should satisfy the answer in terms of what our general guidance is. There are no specific goals to go to OASIS on any particular time or anything like that. Just general guidance to meet our requirements.
Great. Thank you. The next question is about co-creation, and it's back to Mark. In regard to the co-creation co-design process with in which USAID Washington and various missions around the world are experimenting, is the agency going to move to a standardized way of conducting the process, and will this will the agency be transparent about funding available for the design outcome, and will the agency evaluate and disseminate findings on the relative cost of co-design versus traditional modes of solicitation?
Thanks, Jeff. As noted a moment ago, we clearly continue to emphasize that co-creation is a design approach that can be tailored depending on the context of where we're trying to insert co-creation type activities within the program cycle, the whole program cycle. You know, how and what happens during a particular co-creation process may vary if it's done during the design of a project activity, during the solicitation process, or at implementation. It also is recognized that co-creation does not happen or in every procurement or solicitation. It can and has be done at, during the pre-solicitation stage, or it can be simply incorporated into one of the other areas. Collaboration may or may not require a funding discussion depending on what type of the overall outcome of a particular co-creation situation. We clearly recognize the use and understanding of co-creation is very much, has been an evolving process. We continue to evaluate and determine what is the most appropriate use of co-creation. And how is it best used in different situations. We continue training and education, and that will be ongoing. We very much, too, appreciated the various partner input received during the EPPR external listening tour. There were a lot of comments around the co-creation process, in addition to the BAA more specifically. So we are continuing to take note of those areas and those areas in as Randy noted earlier, we have these work streams that were undertaken in the reform efforts based on both the external and the internal inputs and working on ways to formulate that going forward. Again, co-creation approaches may not be applicable related to choice of instrument per se. We do believe it can be used in a procurement an assistance NOFO and separate from the BAA process. The way the partner and the contracting officer communicate and determine how to best utilize it, that's something we're continuing to explore. And again, it can be incorporated in different fashions. So stay tuned in this area. We will try to get more information around the co-creation process and so forth. And again, I think it will be especially helpful as we go through the summer and the reform work streams, as well as the ongoing efforts and the training and information sharing on those. And I think we'll find that more helpful across the board.
Great. Thanks, Mark. We have time for, excuse me, just one more quick question. And it's to you, Mark. It's about length of awards. And the question is, there are a number of solicitations on the forecast that have award lengths of 4 years instead of the typical five. Could USAID provide any additional, or could USAID provide additional clarification on the reasoning behind the shortening of the award lengths for certain bids and whether USAID intends to fund more four-year projects in the future?
Thanks, Jeff. I haven't viewed this as necessarily a new goal or trend within the agency. I'd have to honestly look at the specific solicitations, they could be for any length of period of time. Obviously, we're going through different reform efforts in trying to and ensure and incorporate different elements in the solicitation and the acquisition and assistance process. We're also looking at other areas within the reform, private sector engagement, local capacity building, et cetera. I think it's really on a case-by-case basis, depending on the sector, the solicitation, and where that's at in its spectrum of development. I don't view that as a trend per se, and I'd have to look at some of the more specific solicitations.
Great. Thanks a lot. And thank you, everyone, for joining us. We're going to wrap it up now. Look for the complete answers to all the questions that were submitted for the Q3 business forecast to be posted on usaid.gov/business-forecast in the next week or so. So thank you once again, and we look forward to talking to everyone again soon.